Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. It's Joe at RTE.ie and 51551. It definitely looks like it's Black Friday. Black Friday for COVID. Today, so many developments, all negative, unfortunately. And the latest case Brian just revealed there of this new variant, which is so new, it hasn't even been designated a letter from the Greek alphabet by the World Health Organization. But the latest case has been found in Belgium, also Israel, Hong Kong and South Africa. Let's go to Johannesburg first to Kanyo Farise, who's been on this programme before. Kanyo, good afternoon. When did word break there, Kanyo, that that this new variant had arrived?
Good afternoon and thank you for the invitation and hello to everybody listening. The news broke out, I would say, yesterday, at least amongst ordinary citizens. But of course, I understand amongst authorities it could have been either the previous day or earlier. But in the news, it started making headlines quite a lot from yesterday here in South Africa.
And what has been the reaction?
The reaction of fear, a lot of very negative reaction. Everybody's geared up and ready for the holiday season, which is really approaching. Everybody's ready for the summer. Holidays booked and all sorts of travel plans in place, which are now very much under threat. So even reuniting with family members, etc., is now looking unlikely. Of course, also the previous wave presented quite a lot of trauma, lots of massive loss of family, friends, loved ones, and people are now once again afraid that that is looming with this new wave again being likely.
And what is the percentage insofar as you know, can you? What is the percentage of people in South Africa who've been vaccinated?
So the numbers, we've been told, are improving progressively, but that they are definitely not where we would like them to be. Thankfully, the government has done a lot to make vaccines available, especially to the most vulnerable. That remains open, but of course, there's a lot of hesitancy. So the numbers progressively getting better, but definitely nowhere where we need them to be in order for us to be able to improve people's chances of being safe from this new variant and the probable fourth wave.
And is there any one reason why people are resisting the vaccination?
Some hesitancy comes from, you know, not knowing what kind of impact it could have on one's health, concerns, and of course, false fake news that make the round on social media, which people try to combat, but probably there's not enough of that going around. There probably needs to be much more work done to spread the right information, make sure it's accessible to everyone, including those in rural areas, without, solid connection to the internet, etc., literacy levels, etc. So really just a lot of work needs to be done to dispel false news, false information about what the vaccine does.
And can you, in Johannesburg, for example, where you were, do people wear masks? Do people sanitize? Is it evident, the precautions?
I think most definitely, especially at the beginning stages, lots of mask wearing, lots of sanitizing, even service providers making it mandatory and policing that. So there's been a lot of that. But of course, as the third wave sort of died down, I think people just get a bit more relaxed, to get a little bit more comfortable and not as consistent as they previously were. So I think now with this new threat looming, I think we're going to get back to really serious making sure that everybody complies with the regulations.
And as you know, a number of countries have already banned flights from South Africa landing. And if people do arrive to other means from South Africa, they have to go into hotel quarantine. And there's a strong suggestion today that that will be reinstated in Ireland as well. And as you know, the Munster rugby team are out there, but their games have been cancelled, and they are making arrangements to get home as soon as possible. So is the mood among, like, there's in Ireland today, there would be, it's non-stop on every radio programme, the worry about the new variant and what should be done and what can be done quickly. Is the same level of worry evident there in South Africa, Cano?
Yeah, most definitely, especially with the travel bans that have now been put in place. Of course, economically, that's going to hit a lot of people who have already been affected by just the general devastation caused by COVID. But our tourism industry, of course, has been a lot affected by this.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of worry from business people. There's a lot of worry from everyday citizens. There is definitely, I mean, the news similarly here, both written news as well as social media, as well as even on television, radio, this is the main thing that everybody is talking about. And I mean, there are some who say this is probably a hasty move, that we shouldn't have rushed into the travel ban, and others saying it's a precaution just to at least understand the nature of this variant before we move, to try and somehow reduce the risk by getting to understand it better before we make decisions. So it's definitely something that everybody's concerned about and that everybody's talking about.
And the new variant has largely been detected among young people in South Africa, but that's the lowest. They've between 18 and 34, only one quarter of that population cohort. Only one quarter of those aged between 18 and 34 in South Africa are vaccinated.
Yes, it is concerning, especially because it's only quite recently that the vaccine was open to people below the age of 18. So there's still quite a lot of progress that needs to be made in making sure that young people are vaccinated. Also, it's a time where young people are likely to gather quite a lot more, just because they're doing their final examinations at school. That usually comes with celebrations once they're done with exams. It comes with matric final year farewell parties and the like.
Yeah.
And of course, children close schools, and they get together quite often. So that increases a risk of spreading once again with some of these super spreader events, which could sort of result even in more devastation if it's not controlled as soon as possible.
And when do schools close in South Africa for summer vacation?
So for summer vacation, most schools will close within the next 2 weeks or so, or at least by the 10th of December. So that's quite soon approaching. Some schools are already done with exams and so on. So it's that time of the year. By the 16th of December, definitely everybody will be closed, and that consecutive 3 or 4 weeks will definitely be a time of gathering, family time, holiday activities, etc.
I just wonder, will they go for the summer vacation earlier in South Africa, given this new variant anyway? But it's hard to know what to do. Anyway, Kanyo, thank you again. You've spoken on the programme before, and we really appreciate you talking to us again today. That's Kanyo Farise in Johannesburg in South Africa. Now, different angles on COVID. Annie Colleran. Annie, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
From Tuesday, for the next 2 weeks, NPHET have said no gatherings of children, no sleepovers, keep things to an absolute minimum. And they're also saying that children must wear masks from third class up, beginning next week. What is your situation, Annie?
I'm absolutely gutted and devastated to hear that news. My situation is I have 5 children, but my middle child, Maeve, has hearing loss, and she wears cochlear implants. So she really relies on lip reading as well as hearing to be able to communicate and to be able to hear her peers. So she's been in a situation where she's had to have teachers with masks on for the last 2 years, and it has really has impacted on her and all the other kids like her who have a hearing loss, and really all children with additional needs in the classroom.
Well,
so,
will it apply to your daughter because she's in second class?
It won't apply to her straight away, but no. I just don't believe the 2 weeks. I mean, they said that a circuit breaker, and like two years later, teachers are still wearing masks, and it's just become accepted. At the start, I was just horrified at the thought of teachers wearing masks and the impact it would have on her education, and now it's just... Yeah. It's just a given, and there doesn't seem to be any chance of being stepped down. And the peer-to-peer learning is just so important for her. Like, but sitting in a classroom with kids with masks on, it's really just going to impact on her and all the other children who have a hearing loss on their ability to hear their peers and communicate. And I'm just so sad for them because it doesn't take very much for a child to be considered other or different in a classroom. And once you are considered that, it's very easy. It's very hard to get back in. And it just has knock-on implications for confidence and really their social development.
But are some teachers I know, they're wearing these microphones now. Does that help?
The microphones, without the microphones, she would be totally lost in the classroom.
Okay.
But the microphone is on the outside of the mask. So if a teacher is wearing a mask, the microphone is amplifying her or his voice, but it's still muffled. Sure, I find it hard in shops to hear what people are saying. And as an adult, you have a much bigger vocabulary. You've developed a way of kind of guessing what people are about to say, and that helps you. But a child doesn't have that build up vocabulary over the years, and they really are at a loss.
Okay. It's a no pantos for the next 2 weeks. No sleepovers. No play dates.
Yeah. And I feel like those things are it's very easy and a very quick swish of the pen to cancel all these things in our children's lives. But and they sound flippant, like, oh, no sleepovers. But these things are really crucial to children's development. Yeah. And they're the things that we all had growing up. Like, I have two. My twins are in junior infants, and now their school play is cancelled. It's just all these little things that build their character and gives them a rounded life. And I just feel like it's not right while adults can go to a gig and be up in a room with hundreds or maybe 1,000 people. They can be at a stadium at a festival. And our children are being hit first, really. And it just doesn't seem fair or right. And I just like to see that if they want to bring in mask wearing, then let's see what they're going to do alleviate the damage that's going to cause.
Yeah, stay there with us, Annie. Moana, another angle on what's happening in schools at the moment. Your granddaughter, was it? It was your granddaughter. What happened?
You're speaking to me now, Joe.
Yeah, Moana, yeah.
Yeah, hi. I'll tell you what happened. I was potting around yesterday, and my granddaughter called in after school.
Okay.
And she had her coat on. And I said, how did you get on today? Did you have a nice day? As I always would.
Yeah.
And she said, Nanny, I couldn't feel my feet today in school.
Oh,
and I said, excuse me? She said, I couldn't feel my feet. I said, why? She said, I had to take my runners off and start to rub my feet because they were so cold, they were like blocks of ice. And I said, well, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, all the windows, Nanny, are opened. I said, you're joking me.
For ventilation. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And I said, did you have your coat on?
Mm.
She said, no. She said, we're not allowed to have our coats on, Nanny. I said, did your teacher have her coat on? Yes, she did, Nanny. And I said, well, I said, that's really terrible, I said. And she thought it was, she kind of giggled, but I was absolutely furious, Joe. No, I absolutely was, because I'll tell you, not long before that, my daughter was sent for to take this little girl out of school because she coughed once. Okay. And when my daughter went to collect her, the child was distraught because someone had placed a mask on her, which is protocol, I get that.
Yeah.
But she was so upset because she couldn't go to her tennis that day. That's all she was concerned about. She loves school. She never misses it. She's always getting prizes for going. But to think that the children are sitting in classrooms where all the windows are opened and they're freezing cold. I'm not worried about COVID. I'm worried about pneumonia at this stage.
And Moana, what about lunch? Where do they eat their lunch?
They eat their lunch in the classroom, as far as I'm aware. But they go out, they do go out a couple of times a day out to the yard to play. And they wear their coats there. But I think when they go back inside, they have to take the coats off and then they eat their lunch inside in the classroom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, imagine, like, trying to even learn in that cold, like.
And the reason I asked a question about the lunch is that I heard a story yesterday from a colleague in here that children in his children's school were freezing because they had to eat their lunch outside during the lunch break. There was only so many seats as there would be in the shed, as they call it, the playground. And the other children were sitting on the AstroTurf.
Freezing. Do you know what, Joe? I listened to the news last night. There was a lady on there talking about we're getting the vaccines for the children and all that. And she mentioned about these filtration machines that they have in some schools.
Yeah.
But I know they haven't got them in this school. But I definitely, honest to God, I absolutely was appalled to think that my granddaughter was sitting in a place and she was freezing, her feet were freezing. I mean, and yet they're calling the parents to come down if they're sniffling. So it's no wonder they're sniffling. They're frozen in the school.
Okay, say what it is. Now, the recommendation from NPHET is that children under 12 should avoid indoor settings. So that obviously includes pantos, but the pantos go on for anyone over 12. And I don't know how you can enforce the under 12 rule at the door in the National Stadium or the Gaiety or the Olympia or the Helix or whatever, but that's the recommendation from NPHET. And to wear masks from next week from third class on. Okay, Geraldine McCauley. Geraldine, what's your situation and that of your children?
Hiya, Joe. I have three children who will be affected by this. I have twin 9-year-old boys who are in third class in school. And I have to tell you, I'm just in a state of despair at the thought that they will have to wear masks. One of my boys is profoundly deaf. I heard Annie talking and I share her concerns. I've emailed the National Parents Council, my local TD this morning, Martin Hayden. I'm up the walls at the thought that I really feel that now I'm in a position, if the government agree to this recommendation, that I'm going to seriously have to consider whether I withdraw my twin boys from mainstream education. We have spent years, we've put in blood, sweat and tears, effort, money into this spoken language and listening skills for my deaf son. And now the thoughts of him being in a room with, you know, 25 other children who are all masked, who, you know, his ability to communicate with those children is going to be so seriously impacted. You know, it's like we're disabling him all over again.
And even if you got there will be exemptions, apparently. Even if you got an exemption for your child, it still means everyone else in the class will be wearing a mask, so he can't.
Absolutely, it changes nothing for me. The fact that he's not going to have to wear a mask, like he's not lip reading himself, he's not reading his own facial expressions. He needs to see the faces of all of them other children in his class. And Joe, like, I really feel that, you know, masks in school should be, you know, the last throw of the dice here. And I don't think it is. In our school, I have to say they're fantastic. Can I name who they are?
Yeah, of course.
It's school. We're a senior school in Newbridge. Mm. They they have clear plastic screens between the children.
Okay.
So you have the children sitting the 2 metres apart at either end of the table and a clear plastic screen in between the two children, which effectively masks anything better than a mask on a face that a child is going to be pulling at or anything. I mean, the government really have to look at better solutions here.
Well, they are going to start vaccinating the over fives, I think, from, well, that won't begin till December 20th. That's a month away, well, three and a half weeks away. Geraldine, say there, please, Councillor David Costello, Fianna Fáil and Santry. David, you contacted us. What happened in your case?
No, I'm not a councillor anymore. Okay. I haven't been for a long time. I was actually calling as a parent more than
anything
else.
Okay, that's fine. That's
all right. No, I tell you what it is, Joe. We showed up the swimming classes last weekend with the kids, and we were going in the door, and we were all handed a letter on the way in. And it just said, in response to rising COVID cases, we're going to suspend swimming classes until the middle of January. You know, now, one of the things we've found hard during lockdown is to try and keep structure in the kids' lives, try to keep them exercised, try to keep their spirits high. You know, and it's been hard. Swimming was one of the last things we got back after all the restrictions were lifted. And it's literally only back about a term, and now they're cancelling it again. But the City Council have decided to cancel this without any recommendations from any national body. And it's just galling, like, to think that they can just turn it off. And it almost feels like discrimination against the kids, because you've got aqua aerobics classes happening for the adults, spinning classes, the gym is open, the public swims are open. Everything else is open in that facility up in Finglas, except for the kids' swimming classes. And they just decided to turn them off.
Would it be because... You know, Luke O'Neill going way back, a year ago, I remember Luke O'Neill saying swimming was fine because of the chlorine. But I presume it's the gathering of children and the gathering of staff and adults.
No, but do you know, Joe, it's not even that. I pushed this management when I was in the pool and they couldn't give me a straight answer for us. It's almost because they're short-staffed and the kids are the last, they're the easiest, the low-hanging fruit, the easiest thing to get rid of is the children's swimming classes, you know. And it's infuriating. Like, we've given up so much during lockdown, or the children have, and I think they've given disproportionately to the effort against COVID since the start of all of this. You know, they've missed out on so much school, so much social, so much everything. And here we are again. The first thing to go in a publicly funded swimming pool is the kids' swimming classes.
And it's a swimming pool still open.
Swimming pool is still open for public swims, for adults' aqua aerobics classes. They've got spinning classes in the various spaces. They've got aqua aerobics, they've got aerobics classes, they've got the gym. They have everything open. Like I say, I was in contact with public representatives. I emailed the Lord Mayor's office. I was in touch with council management. I still haven't got a full answer as to why this has happened and why they've just selected children's swimming classes to be cut, you know. And it's like, I know they've been struggling with staff in the swimming pool, but over the last few weeks. But why just decide to cut the children's classes? Like, out of everybody that uses the public amenities, they've given up more than anybody else over the last year and a half.
I'm
sick of it, to be honest with you, because like, if somebody came, like, and I know we're talking about vaccination being on the cards for the kids, like, but that should be prioritised. Like, the kids have given up so much. How can we expect them to keep giving up more and wait another 6, 8, 12 weeks for them to get vaccinated? Like, you know, I've got 5 kids. I would queue up in the morning if I thought I was going to get my kids vaccinated, Joe, just to give them back that sense of normality. Like, I had 2 kids, one puked during the week in school. The other one had a bit of a cough. I had to take them out of school for 2 days this week. I had to bring one of them up to the drive-through testing centre up the airport last night, physically restraining while somebody took a COVID test, and all because we haven't been able to get the kids vaccinated so far. You know, and it's just like, you're either going to let us get our kids vaccinated, or you're just going to let us live, let the kids live their lives. Like, one or two things has to happen, and it has to happen quickly, because you can't keep saying, we're not going to look after kids, we're not going to give you the option to vaccinate your kids. And I understand not everybody wants to vaccinate their kids, Joe, but when you're not given the option to vaccinate your kids, why should you be put in a situation where society then discriminates against kids on a daily basis? And it is a form of discrimination when you choose one class of society just to exclude from something, you know?
Okay. And David, from talking, like, I was quite surprised. I saw one survey which said, they asked parents, would you get your child under 16 vaccinated. And 40% said yes, and 40% said no, and 20% said don't know.
But you know what, Joe? And that's like the illness kids get, and you hear Luke O'Neill, you hear all the science, and they say, kid, the type of disease the kids get is of low impact. You know, it's not going to it's not going to kill them. You know, and it's not going to leave them very sick in most cases. But you know what, I think parents should be given the choice to vaccinate their kids, and a bit like the adults, if you want to use a vaccine passport, then go ahead and use it, you know. But like to me, like, we're not being given the option to vaccinate our kids, but yet they're the first group in society again to be cut and to be discriminated against, and I'm just sick of it, you know.
Well, it's like everything else, it's evolving by the minute, because this pandemic is, as I said before, is non-linear, and nobody can predict what's going to happen next. Okay, thanks indeed, David, Annie, Geraldine and Moana. Joe at rt.ie. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And as we say, things are breaking by the minute in terms of COVID new reactions to this new variant. Sandra, pro-masks, you are very much pro-masks in school. Why?
Because I think they work, because children aren't magical. they can't avoid the virus. And while they may not get very sick, they can bring it home to people who will get sick, and pass it on to other children who might be compromised and will get sick. I have a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old, and we've sent them to school in masks since schools opened last year. And, you know, I despair at the point-blank refusal to accept that children are no different from adults in terms of being able to catch it and spread it. They may not get as sick as they are able to catch it and spread it, and are the most powerful mitigating factor. You know, and the thing is, I feel desperately sorry for the people who are on talking about their children who have additional needs. I have no answer for that, but the specific good of one person can't come ahead of the general good of an entire class and what they bring home to their families. And as a society, I suppose we need to advocate for those children whenever this bloody thing passes, that those children get the support that they need.
It's a real,
you know, but there's no simple answer to it. But masks, you know, our kids, you know, they kind of don't want to wear them, but they put them on, they go in, and, you know, just get on with it.
And Sandra, do you know what percentage of fellow pupils were wearing masks?
Very few. Yesterday, actually, I noticed more children. I think I saw 3 kids wear a mask leaving school, but, you know, in their classes, I think in my son's class, there maybe had been 2. But that's when the numbers started to get very hairy again. And in my little girl's class, I don't think anyone else is wearing a mask other than the teacher. Oh, she just had one. There's one.
Just one, okay.
So, you know, it's a rock and a hard place. But, you know, we're talking about denying children access to all these things that they really need to develop and grow because the virus is out of control, yet we're not treating the children as if they're part of the I'm not going to call them part of the problem, but they contribute to spread, and yet we're saying they shouldn't wear masks.
Well, from next week, third class onwards, have to wear a mask.
Yeah, again, you know, are the children below that magical? They're not. You know, I was talking to a friend last night in New York. A 4-year-old boy has been wearing a mask, you know, for the last year in his preschool. So, you know, I suppose it's just a decision. It has to be made, and it's been made now, But for the younger ones,
and where are Cassandra? Where are COVID cases in that school? There must have been in every school.
There were 100 children out early this week. Not all confirmed COVID, but obviously because of COVID, and then there were 35 confirmed cases.
Sandra, stay well. But I think your phrase there, between a rock and a hard place, sums up where so many people are at this stage.
Thanks indeed,
Sandra. Thanks indeed. Leanne Webstay. Leanne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Why have you contacted us?
I have contacted you as I have just completed 4 years of general nursing in through Trinity College Dublin.
Okay.
My placement was delayed. I had a baby boy, healthy baby boy, last September.
Oh, congratulations. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Well done.
So therefore, my first placement was delayed. I started my internship in January of this year, working mm-hmm. throughout COVID, looking after patients both on COVID and off COVID wards, and resulted in my placement being extended by 9 weeks okay. further on than other students.
So you could catch up on the 7 weeks, which is, by the way, Leanne, fair play to you. You only took 7 weeks after having a new baby.
I did, but I had good friends in college
yeah, okay.
who would pass me on
but,
work and stuff.
I know, but still. But anyway, so you managed to catch up on the placement.
I did. Well, prior to my placement, I struggled coming up to Christmas to get assignments in for college,
okay.
which I did get them done. And I
because coming up to Christmas, last Christmas, I gave you my heart. Last Christmas, Leanne, you would have had a baby that was, 10, 12 weeks old?
I went back to college online when he was less than 8 weeks old.
So you're studying, and as we have heard yesterday, nursing course in any third level institution is really intensive between placements and college work and assignments. So you're doing your assignments with your iPad in one hand and your baby in the other?
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay.
Trying my best dedication to what I
so
do.
So how did you get on with the assignments?
I passed all my assignments.
Well, well
I
done.
Didn't have to repeat any. They were all passed first
well
time,
done.
But that was tough going.
Yeah.
Cranky, colicky baby, long nights, awake at night, taking my stress out on my partner, which suffered lots throughout it, but determined that I was going to graduate and finish college with my classmates that I had met along
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what has happened?
Obviously, I fell behind in one of my placements, so I had to make it up.
Yeah.
I finished all my placements I think it was around the 17th of November, so a week and a half ago,
okay.
I got word from the allocations officer in the hospital I was working on to say that she didn't know if I could graduate from my college because she wasn't sure what the cut-off date was for completing placements.
Okay.
Now, prior to this email, I was not aware that we had a cut-off date. As far as I was concerned, I had up until the 30th of November because looking at my results, I had to complete my placement by the 30th of November.
Okay.
I was also after accepting my graduation spot for the 29th, which was Monday coming, at 4:15. So
okay.
I presumed that I was graduating at 4:15 on the Monday.
Right.
My allocations officer in the hospital I was with got in contact with Trinity,
yeah.
and up until the 8th of November, there was no confirmation of a cut-off date for students to finish their placement. On Monday last, the 22nd, I had to email Trinity to see if I could graduate, and I got an email stating that I couldn't graduate because I hadn't completed my placement on time.
How overdue were you with your placement then?
I still don't know what the cut-off date was. There was no cut-off date up to the 8th of November. There was no cut-off date advised to our two students. When we had to complete it, I was originally to complete my placement by November the 19th.
Mm-hmm.
I had taken off a few days, so I owed 30 hours, which I met up the days, and I completed my placement on Monday the 22nd. However, Friday the 19th was still past the cut-off date for me to graduate.
But you're saying you didn't know the cut-off date?
I don't think any student was aware there was a cut-off date to graduate. If you failed a placement and you had to repeat it, that was a 9-week placement.
I understand that, yeah.
So anybody that did repeat their placement presumed that they were still eligible to graduate, but that wasn't the case.
But did you pass all your placements?
All my placements were passed,
okay.
all my exams
okay.
were passed.
So you passed everything that you had to pass. You fulfilled all the academic and practical criteria for the course.
I did indeed.
So you were eligible to graduate, except Trinity are saying because you graduated beyond the date specified, you can't actually go through the ceremony on Monday.
That's correct. I did have an email stating that when I got my results, I could email them back and they would look at it and I could go for a graduation in spring. However, I got my results last Friday. Mm-hmm. No, sorry, Wednesday. And I emailed Trinity on that day to say that I had my final results, therefore could I graduate? And I was told, no, my name wasn't on the Senate's list, therefore I could not graduate.
But you are qualified as a nurse.
I am qualified as a nurse, yes, but I can't graduate from Trinity this period.
But you're still a qualified nurse.
I am a qualified nurse, yes, as of Monday the 22nd.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But they won't, okay. So, appeal, who did you have a tutor, have you, in Trinity? There's never been allocated a tutor.
I have a personal tutor. I went through him and he emailed me back stating, unfortunately, he had nothing to do with graduation and that I should contact the graduation committee themselves, which I did.
Okay, and?
They replied back and informed me that I had gone past the cut-off date and unfortunately I was not able to graduate.
And is there an appeal system?
There's no, I've gone through 5 different people in the college and each one has replied denying my graduation on Monday.
Hi, Leanne, this is from Trinity. Just to confirm that you were not expected to be conferred during these winter ceremonies. So what difference? Well, obviously it's your colleagues and your confreres and your classmates over that have bonded. I don't think any group bond as close as people who are working so hard in nursing in terms of your placements and your practical work and the challenges. Is the rest of your class graduating? As far as you know at this stage, through your WhatsApp groups or whatever?
As far as I know, there's only one other student not graduating, but that was by choice as well. She had delayed her placement, but she wasn't told she couldn't graduate.
And had you planned for Monday?
I had, from the initial email that I received giving me my time, because we were student groups, I presumed I was graduating Monday.
Okay.
I had booked a night away for myself and my fiancé. We were going between my hospital graduation and my Trinity graduation so that we would have time for ourselves after a long, tough 4 years. and then I had planned for what we were doing Monday for graduation, yes.
Okay. And it's not as if Trinity are saying we've no space in the exam hall on Monday. It's a massive hall anyway. They're not saying it's no space or it's COVID or...
No, regarding COVID, they did. We were split into different groups. So the classes, the graduations were obviously made smaller.
Yeah.
That was to accommodate government guidelines, which is fine. But I'm just not graduating because I have finished my clinical placement past the cut-off date that I was not aware of.
Okay.
There was a cut-off date.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Now, they didn't say what they didn't add what they added yesterday to our caller Sarah, and they did sort that out. They didn't say your parchment is not printed. You can come, but you won't be called up, and you can dress up, but you won't be called up, and you won't be getting a parchment.
But I was offered none of that.
Okay. Now they did change their mind. They did change their mind. By the way, how hard was it as a student being in COVID wards as a student nurse?
It was tough. It was challenging. I've learned skills I didn't think I would ever learn. I learned them within seconds apart because they were needed. But it was also tough on, I suppose, my parents, because they minded my baby. They're both in their 70s. They obviously are at the high-risk group. And I was working COVID positive and then coming home to them, so I was trying to keep my distance. So yeah, it was tough. And then of course family coming in. I have an 11-year-old that's in school who I didn't see for many nights, because when I came in from work he would come to me and I'd say no, and I'd be down, you know, having your shower after, and then he'd be in bed and I'd be gone to work the next day. So it's been tough all around. Yeah.
Okay, well done you. How's your baby?
He's flying, thank God.
Great. So the assignments you did while you had, it's a boy, isn't it? You say it was a boy.
It is, yeah, Leo.
The assignments when you had Leo in one arm and your iPad in the other, you got good marks on them. Now, we won't know for a number of years what marks Leo is going to give you, but I'm sure there'll be, a force, Leanne. Well done.
We've been on
to Trinity. Trinity must think everyone thinks what they want to think. We've been on to Trinity, but we've got nothing back yet. Okay, Leanne, thanks indeed.
Thank you so much for having me on the show at short notice.
I don't know how I can even say this to anyone with a young baby. Please try and get a rest if you can.
I say to all the undergraduates from Trinity, enjoy your day Monday, Wednesday, whenever you are, and have a great time. You all deserve it.
Okay, well done you for saying that. Leanne Websdale, joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Back to South Africa, Jennifer Langton. Jennifer, good afternoon. Your brother is Niall Carney, the well-known Irish professional golfer. Won the Irish PGA Championship in 2014, 2015. He's playing out there. He was playing out there with Cormac Sharp and Jonathan Caldwell and Paul Dunne. And I heard Paul Dunne on Morning Ireland saying he was trying to get back to Dubai, but to get out of South Africa was looking difficult. Where is Niall now, Jennifer?
Hi, yes, Joe.
Hey, Dan.
Niall, at the moment, is on a flight from Johannesburg to Ethiopia. So his partner in Waterford was following Fionnuala. She was following the news and everything last night. Following Sky News and everything. And she kind of really quickly realised that something was amiss and they probably had to try and get out of there. So at 3 o'clock this morning, she managed to get Niall and my dad Joe is his caddy.
And
the two of them onto a flight, Ethiopian Airlines, from Johannesburg to Ethiopia.
Okay.
And then they're going to go from Ethiopia to Stockholm and then Stockholm, hopefully, back home to Dublin. And so we're kind of just waiting with bated breath, really, because number one, obviously, we're a little bit nervous with them flying into Ethiopia with, you know, everything that's going on there.
And especially Ethiopia. Well, we won't add any extra worry. They're flying into Ethiopia. They're on Ethiopian Airlines for a start. That helps. And then they go. Who flies them from Addis Ababa to Stockholm?
As far as I'm aware, it's Ethiopian Airlines
Stockholm,
but I'm not 100% sure of that. So then obviously they have a 3-hour layover in Ethiopia and then they have to get on the plane then and fly to Stockholm. Once they land in Stockholm, they obviously Stockholm hasn't announced that that there's going to be any issues with flying in there, but, you know, I'd say probably in a couple of hours, you know, things could change again. But a flight has just arrived into Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And they from Johannesburg, and they're not allowing anybody to get off the plane.
Wow.
So I don't. Do you know what I mean? I don't really know, but I'm kind of saying, get them to Europe anyway. You know what I mean? And kind of we can figure it out from there. But so I think there was 17 Irish and UK golfers trying to get out of.
Okay.
Or withdrew from the tournament in Johannesburg this morning.
It looks like they're going to have to go. It looks like, from what the Taoiseach was saying today, that now we don't know what Sweden have adopted a different attitude all along, but it came back to bite them more recently. But if Sweden don't quarantine them for 2 weeks, it looks like Dublin will.
Yes, potentially.
Yeah.
I think, do you know what I mean? The quarantine, what they're saying at the moment is that, like for the UK, is that you have until 4 a.m. on Sunday morning to get in to the UK from South Africa before you have to quarantine in a hotel. So before 4 a.m. on Sunday, you can quarantine at home. And then after 4 a.m. you have to quarantine in the hotel. So I'm not sure whether Ireland will be the same or what, you know. But I just heard on the news there before you came on that if we do bring in quarantining again in Ireland, it's going to have to go through legislation anyway. So it's not it's not going to be immediate anyway.
The legislation has lapsed.
So they got a PCR test in South Africa before they got on the plane. And I'm not sure whether they have to get another one in Ethiopia before they go on a plane again. And then obviously they'll get one then when they get to Dublin as well.
Okay. Well, hopefully, they get back. It's a ticking clock, isn't that what they're up against?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. So they're trying to get to Stockholm before Stockholm kind of shut down, yeah. And then they're trying to get to Dublin then before Dublin,
demands hotel quarantine.
Yeah, do anything yeah. either. So.
But either way, as you said earlier, the two of them are going to be very careful when they come back. They're going to either quarantine at home. If they have to, but hopefully that's probably the best option, is it, Jennifer? Does your dad and your brother, do they live together?
No, my brother has his own house, and then my dad lives with my mom. Do you know what
well,
I mean?
It looks like your brother and your dad might have to live together for another 2 weeks.
Yeah, whatever. Well, yeah, whatever it takes when they yeah. get back to Dublin to keep yeah. everybody safe. That's not even a question. Yeah. But it's just that bit, we just need to get them back to Dublin.
Yeah, and fair play to them for not hesitating and just getting up. I know it's a nightmare trying to get back, but hopefully. How long has your dad been his son's caddy from the get-go?
Well, it's probably the last year. Niall's wow. obviously had a huge amount of opportunities last year because of COVID, so he got into, a huge amount of, like a lot more tournaments.
Okay.
So at the end of this year now, his category has gotten better again, which is mm-hmm. great. So, who knows? My dad complains, but he loves every second of it.
But do they get on? They must.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're like chalk and cheese, so they bounce off each other.
That's fantastic. Now, well, listen, safe travelling to them all. Niall, especially in the Walker Cup, represented the country and represented Europe as well, and did an extraordinary job. So we hope they will get home safely, Jennifer, and we hope then everything works out as best it can in terms of quarantine. Okay, keep in touch. That's Jennifer Langton, and her brother is Niall Carney, the Irish professional golfer. He's currently in the air between Joburg and Addis Ababa. Cathy is just back from Spain. Cathy, your observation, please.
Well, we found children, say, small tots now, coming out of school mm-hmm. and the masks on them, right? Now, outdoors, you didn't need the mask unless it was busy. They told us that's what we asked at the accommodation. And they told us if it was busy, put on your mask. But indoors, the mask was put on. You would not be left into a taxi or on a bus unless you had a mask on you.
Okay, they were strict.
Oh, very strict. Like, we saw a couple one night, we were walking and they hailed on the taxi and the door was locked, couldn't open it. And he just opened the window, this mask in, and he was saying, like, sure, they put on the mask, yeah. He let them in. And the same with the bus. There was, you might accidentally walk, just put your foot on, and the driver was there indicating, put on your mask. Do you know? And everyone put it on and left it on in the bus. Or, say, in the restaurants, you went in with your mask on. Once you sat down at the table, you could take it off. And in fact, there was one restaurant going around with the hand sanitizer. Once you came in, they came to the table and gave the hand sanitizer.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, I felt safer. You'd feel safer going into a place. No, they didn't ask for COVID certs or anything like that. But I suppose, and being in Spain, you were maybe outdoors a bit more, eating. Like, it was, more of a canopy than, being indoors. Mm. So, I don't know.
Did you feel safer?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Did you feel that in Spain they were strict? Now, Spain have got a handle on it, especially in the more recent past. But did you feel safer in Spain than you do here in Ireland?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah.
And when is the times you don't?
I suppose, maybe this is me now, but going into shops and the hand sanitizer, people just pass you. No, basically in shops, people are putting on the masks. But I'd say in buses and things, sometimes not so much. Yeah. Or in crowds, if you're in
I know he was on, he phoned in 2 days ago. I don't think we managed to get to him. A chap who was on a bus, and he said he's just sick, sore, and tired of the abuse he's taken when he tries to open the windows. Are supposed to be open on buses, you know that, all the windows.
Yeah,
he's trying to open windows, and people are eating the face off him.
Yeah, some of the buses were air conditioned, and that was grand. But the windows were open. But obviously, no, the weather. If the windows were open and the thing in the middle. But I suppose the point I was making as well was that the school children, there was little tots coming out, and they couldn't have been more than 6 or 7 years old, and they had the masks on them, and there wasn't a bit of bother. And the parents going in to collect them had the masks on them too.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that's been in a couple of weeks. Could, you know, things could change there with, you know, they could have this big wave, but they seem to be kind of, stricter on, like, say, you know, stricter on things.
Okay.
And the only other thing, now I'll go after this now, is when we got the bus, we were getting the bus from the airport into the hotel, and it was stopped, and a policeman came out and looked and made sure everyone had a mask on.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that's happened here yet.
Oh, no.
Okay. Kathy, stay safe. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Elaine Minietti has contacted us from Boston. Elaine, good afternoon on this Thanksgiving weekend. You have an observation about masks.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
In school. So I work in a preschool. I have worked here for 18 years in the same school. And once our children came back to school in September of 2019, I think we shut down March through September. Everybody wears a mask every single day. Three-year-olds, four-year-olds, five-year-olds, they can't come into school without a mask, and they take it off when they're eating. And we had one case of COVID that a child caught from his grandparents, and it never spread through the school because, you know, immediately the child was sent home. The classroom was sent home for a week. Everyone got tested, no staff, no children. Nobody caught it. The masks work. We're still wearing masks.
Wow!
All the staff is vaccinated.
And how do you persuade a three-year-old to wear a mask, Elaine?
Right. I know. I was thinking the same thing. This is not going to work. It's habit. They just wear it. You know, is it a pain? Yes. You know, that you have to constantly fix it for three-year-olds. But the four-year-olds, five-year-olds, five-and-a-half-year-olds, they all put their masks on. It's just... In fact, I was leaving school the other day and one of the children told me, your mask is down beneath your nose, pull it up.
Okay.
So it's a habit. And there are drawbacks. They say the language development with the younger kids is not happening, you know, as well because of the mask. But that will get addressed, hopefully, when we don't have to wear them. But, we wear them all the time. When they go out to the playground, they can have a mask break if they choose to. A lot of children actually don't take the
mask
off.
Break, in the fresh air.
In the fresh air. So, and that's the advice we got from our, you know, the doctors on our school board. Take a mask break outside, but a lot of children don't. I personally do, but the kids take their mask off when they're eating lunch. They hook them onto the back of their chair. Yeah. If they're wet or, you know, get kind of dirty. They have a bag of clean masks the parents sent in. The dirty mask goes in. The dirty mask goes in the Ziploc bag and gets sent home to get washed. And it really, I can honestly say, it is not an issue. And I think, you know, the fact that we have had one child with COVID
that
never spread throughout the school.
So what would you say to, are you from here originally, Elaine?
I'm from Dublin.
Dublin. You never lost your accent.
I didn't. Well, I go back frequently, but masks are
What would you say to your parents or teachers here in Ireland? What would you say to us?
Just wear the mask. Everybody, you know, it's not pleasant. I know sometimes I have to wear a mask, but they work. You can't get on a bus, a train. You can't go into a store. In most of the towns here in Massachusetts.
By the way,
they dropped it for a while in the stores, but now they're back to wearing masks in stores.
Okay. And are schools open today on Black Friday?
No, today is a holiday. Today's Thanksgiving. Everyone goes back to school on the four-day weekend. On Monday.
Okay.
Yeah, 4-day weekend. But the kids at high school, the kids in the elementary schools, they're all wearing their masks.
Okay.
And the teachers.
And
I just listen because to me it's not rocket science and it really does help.
As we heard earlier, there are exceptions like children who are hard of hearing, can't work out.
It's
a real difficulty, isn't
it? But anyway, and that is
a rock and a hard place. But you're saying, the one example you're giving us, the one example you're living, that is in a school in Boston, every child told from three upwards, you must wear a mask at all times in the school, except when you're eating or except when you're open in the fresh air, out in the fresh air, you can have a mask break. And you're telling me you've only had one case of COVID.
Absolutely.
And are many in the school? Absolutely. Are many pupils
in the school? Right, this year we had, you know, during when we reopened in September 2019, we went from five, it's a small school, five classes to three. Okay. Now we're back up to four classes. So I think we have 54 children around that, 50 or 60.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Stay safe,
Elaine. So it's a small school. Yeah. Yeah. But my point being that even in the larger elementary schools, the children are wearing masks.
Okay, and what's the general, the general trend in COVID there, Elaine, recently?
We have introduced pool testing in schools. So, you know, we get tested every Monday.
Okay.
And the results come back Tuesday. So if anybody has COVID, you know, that class is shut down. It hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
And generally in my neighbourhood where I live, it's people are very compliant and it seems to be working really well. None of our schools have shut down.
Okay. Would you come home? Well, I presume home is Boston, but would you come back to Dublin for Christmas or do you have any plans? Or?
No, but I have been there three times this past year.
Okay.
Since last February, I've gone back and forth.
Okay.
And it's been a good experience and, yeah.
Okay.
I think they did a great job at the airport, on the airplane.
Right.
At least when I was travelling.
Okay.
I think things have taken up since then, but
this week has given an awful lot of people an awful shock at so many levels, anyone that was. And it's understandable if people become complacent or immune or whatever.
Right.
But it's
we're all fed up, I guess.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody's fed up.
Absolutely.
Same here. But.
Yeah, but stay together and stay close. Will you watch the toy show tonight, Elaine, from Boston?
I'm going to try.
Yeah, do.
I'm
you can get it on. It's going to be on the RT player, I'm told.
Yeah.
And all the.
Yeah, I'm not very technical, but hopefully I can.
Going to be on the RT player. And you'll be one of something like 72 nations, that will be watching. And we've seen a good few previews here today, and it looks sensational. So let's take a break from this trauma we're going through. Okay, now more than ever, the Thai show. Elaine Mininetti, good to meet you, Margaret.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Joseph, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe, how are you?
Good, what's your situation at the moment, your housemates?
That's right, yeah. I've had two confirmed cases in the house, with two housemates last weekend. I work as a secondary school teacher. Out of honesty, I contacted the school, you know, and said, look, I am a close contact. I got tested myself, proved negative.
Yeah.
And now I was just looking at some forms there over the last day or two that I have to fill up, you know, for leave that I have taken this week because I've had to work from home. And I've done a full week's work, 4 or 5 hours a day, preparing stuff in the morning, you know, typing up answers to exercises, posting them online to the kids, full week's work. And I've just been reading the departmental circular here, which reads, and I quote, special leave with pay will not apply where an employee has been facilitated to work remotely, i.e. from home, under the following circumstances, and A, restricting his or her movements. So I'm looking at that and I'm saying to myself, I've done a full week's work in my mind. I've sat there at my computer for hours every day, continued on with stuff that I wanted to do, was honest in terms of reporting close contacts, and now I found out, according to that circular from the Department of Education, that I'm not going to get paid for that. And that circular is 0042-2021.
And what is special leave normally classified as?
You
will not get paid for special leave. Is that the phrase you read out?
That's right, yeah. There's two types of special leave. I was looking to fill up forms. One type is there's a Form A where if you display symptoms or you've been diagnosed with COVID-19, and then there's a Section B then that a special leave refers to if you've had to self-restrict your movements, which I've had to.
So because it falls under that category, you won't get paid.
Well, that's according to the circular.
But the government are running ads, which is just conversation among people. Thanks, and they're saying thanks for not coming in to work.
Yeah.
Because you were, and it's not logical that if you're living with two people who have COVID, that you shouldn't go into work.
It's 100%, yeah, but that's I agree with that because that's the rule and the regulation. But I was asked, you know, to get the work in, you know, to send in work in the morning, get it done. And in my mind, I've been here working all week at the computer, preparing stuff, typing up the answers, many hours a day doing that. And I find out that I'm not going to get paid for that. So I've done a week's work basically for nothing, in my mind, yeah.
Okay, and have you raised this with your union?
Not yet, no, because I have had to contact them before over something, but a lot of them don't seem to be in the office at the moment, and it's quite difficult to get through. And I've contacted the employer as well, to a human resources office, and I've made one phone call, two emails. There's nothing has happened yet. There's no response happening.
And how are your housemates that have COVID? How are they doing?
Oh, they're fine. You know, the symptoms, you feel very, very light. Yeah, it's been okay. It's not. They'll be fine. Yeah.
And were they vaccinated? Can I ask?
Oh yeah, they have been. Oh, yeah, as far as I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's a unusual one. We'll try and find out more, Joseph, as you will. Though, if are you the ASTI or the TUI or
and the TUI.
Well, they're all very strong unions. Very good unions. They take up your case. Thanks indeed, Joseph. Let me go to Catherine. Catherine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
We were talking about stress over the last few days, and insomnia, and people waking up in the middle of the night, and they think they have a tickle in their throat or the temperature, and immediately they go into panic stations over COVID. But you have insomnia, but you've had it for a long, long time.
35 years, Joe.
And how does it show itself in your life?
Exhaustion, tiredness, cancelling events, not being able to have a job, lack of income, lost friends, lost relationships, social activities affected, not able to pursue the things I love to pursue. Travel, needless to say, is a joke. Kayaking, I like to kayak, I like horse riding, lots of outdoor activities that sometimes I can pursue and then sometimes I can't.
Okay, well, describe your insomnia. Does it mean, when do you sleep?
Well, believe it or not, it hasn't been too bad for the last 5 years.
Okay.
But it's got to the chronic stage at the moment. And sometimes when I try to do too much, or I feel under pressure from people that don't understand my insomnia, and don't understand why I have to cancel things. It puts me under an undue pressure. And then I actually get anxious about my insomnia, if you understand.
Yeah, it builds up.
Builds up, and then my adrenaline kicks in.
Well, could you go...
And then the adrenaline keeps me awake.
I won't say could. Do you go without sleep for 24 hours?
Yes.
48 hours?
I know that I've been awake for 17 days in a row.
And 17 nights.
And 17 nights. And that's for definite.
And how come you didn't collapse?
Just because, I don't know, I'm just very strong and I just great courage and I just keep going. But I don't function well, that's the problem. That's why I have to keep changing things and cancelling things.
And when you go to medics over the years, what do they say?
Well, they mention melatonin, they mention Stilnoct, they give me prescriptions for these, for melatonin, for Stilnoct.
For the sleeping tablets, and do they work?
For me, they don't, no. I just have to try and write it myself. So I have to allow myself to crash, and then I have to cancel everything, literally, and just stay inside, relaxed, quiet, and then try to get over it that way.
But when you lie in bed tonight, you won't doze off.
Sometimes I will. I'll doze off, and then I kind of wake up again, and then I'll doze off again, and then I'll wake up again. But sometimes I have actually, got to say, gone nights and I haven't slept at all, just not at all.
And what's going through your head when you're not sleeping?
Well, I get bored sometimes, so I could think about anything really, just kind of because I'm so bored. And then sometimes then if I've got something on, I'd be worrying about how I'm going to change it or how I'm going to tell them or how I'm going to cancel it.
Well, because
it's very isolating.
Because you know next day you won't be...
I won't be able to do it, yeah. It's so annoying
and would you sleep,
so frustrating.
Excuse the stupidity of my question. Would you then fall asleep during the day?
No. No.
But surely... And that episode, and you said you've had insomnia now for 35 years, and one episode lasted 17 days and 17 nights in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But surely you were hospitalised at the end of that.
I was very close to it. I don't know how, I really don't know how I've survived it, Joe. Now, that's the truth. It's a medal I deserve. I don't know what sort of a system that I have, but... It started from a job, and it seemed like it's my default position.
Well, tell us the job.
I used to work for an airline.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work back-to-back on international flights, and then I'd come home then for up to 16 days to Ireland. So I'd do four international, maybe one domestic trip, back-to-back-to-back-to-back. And then I'd, on my last trip... I'd have my bag packed and then I'd go back, let's say, to JFK and then catch a flight to London and then catch a flight to Dublin. And that's after going from JFK to Europe, back to JFK four times. And then the fifth time, then I come back to Ireland. I come home for...
And are you saying this may be a habit that you've developed?
Yes. And it's almost like it's a default position. My body actually goes into this place and it's very hard for me to get it back. That's the truth. It sounds crazy, but it's true.
And has the pandemic made a difference?
No, the pandemic hasn't made a difference, no. Not to me, personally, no. It hasn't made me... I haven't been stressed at all about the pandemic.
But are you stressed about the insomnia?
Yes.
And have you tried CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy?
I've tried everything. I've been to Harry Barry. He was great. He did actually help.
And what's the worst thing about insomnia?
Cancelling things, letting people down, people not understanding.
And do you tell them, listen, I can't go today, I'm wrecked?
Sometimes. To be honest with you, it's almost like I feel like I'm hiding it.
Hmm.
I'm hiding it all the time because I people just don't understand and they kind of look at me like, what's she on about?
I've never heard of anyone, Catherine, until you, I believe you totally, 70 days and nights in a row without sleep. Just shocking. Anyway, Catherine, thanks for contacting us. We'll keep in touch. That's Catherine in Bailieborough, County Cavan. Today's programme produced by Shanna Gorman. Researched by Richie Byrne. Sound, Pádraig Kearney. BCO, Daniel Keating. Rebecca Meehan is the series producer. Ray Darcy is next, but the Toy Show is tonight. Enjoy!
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.